El 8 de junio recién pasado, esta fotografía que usted ve en pantalla ha cumplido 50 años y su protagonista está aquí en CNN en Español para contarnos cómo esta instantánea cambió su vida para siempre. Kim, gusto de saludarla. ¿Cómo está? ¿Cómo esta fotografía cambió para siempre su vida?
Good morning. Yes. The photograph was taken in the moment when I was 9 years old in June 8, 1972. I never forget that moment in my life. I just turned 9 years old, and I remember when we, as a children, we just play in the nearby the bomb shelter in the temple courtyard. And then after lunch, and we heard the soldiers, they yelling for us and ask us to run. Then as a children, we run fast. And then I remember I was one of them when we ran up to in the front of the temple. And we just got into the Highway 1. Then I saw the airplane. It just so fast, towards to us. Then I just stood right there. I didn't run. I just look up, I turned my head and I look up and I saw the airplane. It's so loud and so close and so fast. Then I saw four bombs. I saw the four bombs landing like that. Then I heard the noise, boop, 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 boop. Then suddenly the fire was everywhere around me. Then I, of course, my clothes was burned off by the fire. And I saw the fire is stuck over my left arm. And I used my right hand, I wrap it up. And then I was so scared, so terrified. Then I remembered at that moment, I thought, oh my goodness, I got burned and I will be very ugly, so the people will see me different way. But then I thank God for that moment. My feet weren't burned. And then I was able to run out of that fire. And then I saw my brothers and I saw my cousin. Then I saw some of the soldiers, South Vietnamese soldiers, they were there. And then we kept running and running and running until I felt so tired to run anymore. So I stopped. Then I cried out, too hot, too hot. Then there was a soldier gave me some water to drink. And he tried to help me. He poured the water over me. Then that moment, I lost consciousness. I passed out. I didn't remember anything else.
Usted, desgraciadamente, en el marco de la guerra de Vietnam, porque esto pasó en una aldea de Vietnam del Sur, fue quemada a raíz de una bomba con napalm, que es una especie de gelatina, un líquido químico que desafortunadamente se adosa a su cuerpo y eso le produjo quemaduras, entiendo, en el 65% de su cuerpo. El otro 30% de su cuerpo, entiendo que usted perdió prácticamente la piel. El fotógrafo de AP que tomó la foto fue clave, fue fundamental para que su vida se salvara, porque entiendo que él la llevó a un hospital y exigió en ese hospital que usted fuese atendida, porque en ese hospital por las quemaduras que usted tenía, no la querían atender. ¿Esto es así?
Sí. Yeah, yes. After I lost consciousness, and all the stories of the people who was there, their story became my story because I didn't remember anything else. And the photographer, he told me that, yes, he took the moment when I ran out and run with my brothers and my cousin, then not only took my picture, but when he saw me burn so severely, burn, and he just put down his camera and he rushed me to the nearest hospital. He saved my life. I just really thankful for his action. And just became a part of my family. So I call him Uncle Ut.
Las vendas que fueron fundamentales para su salvación, para salvar su vida, porque el napalm, al entrar en contacto con el oxígeno, sigue quemando su cuerpo, y en este caso, las vendas salvaron su vida, ya que no permitieron que el napalm siguiera propagándose y siguiera produciendo quemaduras más severas. Estuvo también en varios centros asistenciales. Incluso usted estuvo en la morgue esperando la muerte. Pero su padre, desesperado, le suplicó a un médico amigo que la llevara a un hospital. Y usted allí estuvo por 14 meses.
Sí, I learned a lot what happened to me at that time. The story that my mom told me that she found me in the morgue. And that is everything is happened. It's for me, it's so mystery that God had a plan for that little girl. And then it's just a really, I'm so thankful to be alive and to learn so many things that happening in my life when that happened as a child. And yes, I survived. And I was in the hospital for 14 months. And I went through 16 operations at that time. And one more time in Germany in 1984. And so, yeah, it's so difficult for a little child. But for me, I think as a child, I didn't thinking so much. As a little child, I just suffered so much pain. And when the pain was unbearable, I just passed out. And that is how the process of the treatment is. It's terrible.
Kim, ¿qué pasó cuando usted vio esa fotografía por primera vez en el hospital? ¿Qué sintió?
Well, during the time in the hospital, I didn't see the picture. And during the time in the picture, the time in the hospital, I just feel like everything was normal for me because everyone around me as a normal, because everyone have something and then end up in the hospital. I thought, okay, that's fine. But when I came home after 14 months in my village, in my house, the only one I got burned as a child. I lost my two cousins. One is 3 years old and one is 9 months. And then me, when I returned home, so my father gave me my picture. Then first time I saw my picture and I react, what? Why he took my picture like that? I was a little girl, naked, crying, hopeless. my face, so agony. And when he printed that picture, I felt so ugly and ashamed. And why he not protect me? And whatever. I thought, why he took my picture naked while my brothers and my cousin with clothes on? And I asked myself, does everyone understand my pain? And of course, I didn't like that picture. I hated that picture. I didn't want to see that.
Claro, después vamos a hablar sobre el momento en que usted se reconcilia con esa foto, pero le quiero preguntar por el dolor. Usted todavía vive con dolor crónico y también tiene ciertos movimientos limitados hace 50 años, ¿no?
Sí. I have been suffering and endure so much, not only the ugly scar that I carry on, but the pain is, I don't know why, but I got so much pain since I got burned. And even 40 years later, I still need the treatment. So I'm so thankful that Dr. Jill Weiber in Miami, she offered the laser treatment, and I went through 11 laser treatment already. And that treatment is really helped me to ease my pain more than halfway. Yeah, before I always almost 9 of 10 or 8 of 10, sometimes 10 of 10. It's really so difficult for me. But after 11 laser treatments, I got about 4 of 10, 5 of 10. It's just a miracle for me. I'm really thankful for that.
Fantástico, qué buena noticia. Entiendo que ese tratamiento, además, de alguna forma e irónicamente, quema su piel para que salga piel nueva, y eso es lo que le produciría mucho menos dolor. Kim, estoy realmente complacido, muy contento de poder oír su historia. Es conmovedora. Le invito a hacer una pausa y cuando regresemos vamos a hablar sobre cómo el gobierno de Vietnam la utilizó usted durante muchos años para su propaganda y cómo un buen día en un aeropuerto canadiense usted desertó. Hacemos una pausa y ya regresamos. Conversando con Kim Phuc Phan Thi, ella es conocida como la niña del Nepal, esta famosa fotografía de una niña descalza, completamente desnuda, que en el año 1972 en Vietnam del Sur recibió una bomba de napalm, un líquido realmente peligrosísimo y hoy día prohibido, que se utilizó durante esa cruenta y cruel guerra. Kim, estoy muy complacido de seguir esta conversación con usted y quería preguntarle qué trauma psicológico a usted le dejó lo que vivió ese 8 de junio de 1972.
Well, I really, after I got burned and in the hospital, I got the treatment for my burn. But after that, I facing with so many like nightmare, trauma, and low self-esteem. And be honest, with the scars and the pain that I carry almost every day, I thought, I never have a boyfriend when I growing up, and I never get married, so that I never have a normal life. And so my dream that I really want to wear a a short sleeve blouses, just like everyone else, like my friends, girlfriends. And because I came from the place, the weather is so hot, always hot and hotter. And so I really suffer physical and emotional. And that is only the way that I have to deal daily life during I growing up.
Usted cuenta que el gobierno de Vietnam durante muchos años la utilizó para dar entrevistas, conferencias alrededor de todo el mundo, que usted siempre iba a muchos lugares con vigilancia, que monitoreaban sus movimientos, sus conversaciones, y que un buen día usted recibe, digamos, una invitación para ir a estudiar medicina en Cuba. Y allí en Cuba usted conoce al amor de su vida, ¿no?
This is the time I was in Cuba since 1986 to 1992. And so this is a very difficult time for me because I was far from the family. I was in Cuba alone and a very difficult time. But I found the best thing in Cuba during the time I was there, that I met my husband, Tuan Bui Huy. So after that, we got married. And then, actually, our wedding anniversary is September 11th in 1992. What a day, eh? I never forget that. Oh, well, and after I got married, we got married, and we have no choice. We just have permission to go to Moscow for our honeymoon.
Pero déjeme interrumpirla, porque entiendo que antes del matrimonio, su familia no aceptaba a Tuan. Porque él era de Vietnam del Norte, ¿eso es cierto?
Sí, sí, porque this is a very difficult, it's about history, North and South, and Tuan, he was from the North, and I'm from the South. Yes, definitely, my family didn't agree, but for me, love, with true love, no enemies. True love cover everything.
Absolutamente. Oiga, y usted se va de luna de miel con Tuan, se van a Moscú. Van a su luna de miel y se produce el regreso a Cuba, pero el regreso tenía una escala técnica en Ontario. Y cuando usted se baja a Ontario, usted sostiene una conversación con Tuan y le dice que tenía una idea, se alejan, entiendo, de la gente que los podía estar escuchando y siguiendo, y usted le plantea la idea de desertar, la idea de ser libres, de empezar una vida de nuevo. Yo les quiero preguntar, ¿cuándo usted planeó esa conversación con Tom?
Just, I have the idea, I have a dream to seeking for freedom, but I didn't share with him at all about my dream because I'm so afraid of, someone else know about that, and it's very dangerous for me. Then I just share with him, with Tuan, when we got into the airplane from Moscow back to, because we know that is our airplane stopped over in Gander, Newfoundland, and at the airport Gander. And so around 7 hours. And during that time, I share my mind and my dream to my husband, with my husband. And then, he was shocked. I asked him, yes, he knows what happened in my life. I want to have freedom in my life. And That is how I need it. Yeah. And I thank God finally we could able to make it. Yeah. We were able to make it. And this is a really changing life, a new chapter with a new adventure.
Entiendo que usted para entrar a Canadá siguió el ejemplo de algunos cubanos que estaban al otro lado de la ventana y que los mismos cubanos que estaban desertando le hicieron gestos o le dijeron algunas frases sobre qué tenía que hacer para estar usted también al otro lado de la ventana. Pero esta historia usted me la cuenta después de la pausa. Estoy conversando con Keefood Tafti. Ella es la niña de La Palma. Y regresamos con esta conversación tras la pausa. Estoy conversando con Kim Phuc Phati. Ella es conocida como la niña de La Palma, resultó quemada hace 50 años, el 8 de junio de 1972, y me acompaña hoy día desde Toronto, Canadá. Kim, antes de la pausa le preguntaba sobre el momento en el cual usted desertó, y para entender cómo se hacía, cómo se desertaba, cómo uno podía cruzar la frontera canadiense y entrar al país, usted siguió el ejemplo de los cubanos que habían desertado en ese avión o quizá en otros y que estaban al otro lado de la ventana. ¿Qué recuerda ese instante?
Okay. When the airplane landing to Gander Airport, so we supposed to get out of the airplane for refueling. Okay, just for 1 hour, then I really wish someone can read my mind in order to come to me and ask, give help for me to stay. But of course, nobody can read my mind, and I wish I can read their mind in order I can follow them to stay. But of course, it's impossible. Then we just got into the waiting room area. And for me, I just walk around and around and around and looking for somehow to make that happen, to stay in Canada. But of course, nothing happened. And then suddenly I have the good idea that, okay, I can hide myself in the washroom and I stay above of the toilet so people couldn't see my feet. Then they may let me stay. But then I did. Then I thought, oh my goodness, how about my husband? He stay outside and I don't want to lose him. And then I thought is when the passenger went back to the airport, and the gate to airplane, so they have to count how many people, the number, if they miss somebody, so they, of course, they should go back and check. How about me? It was so dangerous. Then I just stopped thinking about that. I went out of the washroom, and at the corner of the airport in Gander, they build the way that is all about around you. It's just a crystal wall, and so you can see everything from outside and inside. So at the corner, I just cowered. I was so panicking, so nervous, so afraid of everything. And I count every single minute, 27, 26, 25 minutes left. What I have to do? And suddenly, in the midst of all scary moment, I heard the small voice in my ear this way. Pray, Kim, God will help you. Then I just suddenly, like, I just closed my eyes and I listened to that voice and I pray, God, please help me. Show me the way I can make it stay in Canada. Please, I just beg God help me. I just kept praying until in my heart, I felt completely confident. No more fear, no more nervous at all. So that moment, I opened my eyes. And from inside at that corner of that waiting room area, I looked out in the hallway. I saw a small group, about 5-6 people. And I thank God for 6 years in Cuba. I recognized them. They from Cuba.
Wow.
Knew it. And then they were so young, about 23, 24 years old. It means they should be a Cuban, you know, student. And then I just remember the rumors that I heard before I left Cuba. So they should do something here. And then I just, quietly, I got closer to the door. The door opened just a little bit enough. I put my face outside and then I asked them in Spanish. Yeah, because I knew they come from Cuba, right? And then I asked them in Spanish, ¿Qué están haciendo aquí, por favor? And then one of them, they say, we want to stay in Canada. And I say, yo también, por favor, ayúdame. and then one of them, the boy, and then he just showed me the direction. You just give your passport to the officer right there. And I look at that direction, I saw immigration office, and then I turn my head and I asked my husband, Tuan, please give to me your passport. And I thank God he didn't ask me any question and he didn't say no to me. Then he gave it to me, his passport. And I have two passports at my hands. Then I got out of that door and I walked towards to the officer and I gave him two passports and I say in English, my English was then very poor, but I was able to say, we want to stay in Canada. And he took our passport, he checked the picture, my face and torn face, then he looked at us and he said, okay, yes, okay. And I look at him, very funny face. I say, that easy like that? And he laughed and said, yes, it's easy like that. And he speak very, very slow and clear. So I was able to understand. Please wait for another officer coming for interview. So at that moment, Tuan and I joined with that small group and we waiting. Believe me, about 10 minutes waiting there. Then another officer opened that door and asked us, please come in for interview. Then we were just a small group. We got into that door, and then in right at that moment, the passenger will call, go back to the airplane. So we crossed them, they crossed us, and then we saw each other. It's very clear, and they look at us, but we safe. We got into Canadian land already. And then I just say, adios, forever, adios. So that is the moment we stay in Canada. We save. And the officer just asked us three questions. What's your name? Where you come from? And why you stay in Canada? It's so easy for me. My name, I came from Vietnam, and I want to have freedom in Canada. And that's all this process that I'm so thankful that Canadian, they accepted us. And that's why we moved to Toronto. And yeah. Then, 30 years ago. Wow. I'm Canadian now.
Incredible. Una historia realmente increíble, Kim. Vamos a hacer una pequeña pausa y al regreso vamos a conversar de lo que fueron esos años, los primeros años en Canadá. También lo que significó Dios, lo que significó la maternidad y también lo que significó el hecho de volver a estar en el ojo público otra vez porque un buen día a usted le tomaron una foto y apareció en el diario local y eso vino a cambiar las cosas nuevamente. Hacemos una pausa y seguimos conversando al regreso de publicidad con la niña en la palma. Conversando con Kim Phuc Phaty, ella es conocida como la niña del napalm. Kim, usted vivió los primeros años en Canadá absolutamente en el anonimato. Fueron años difíciles, usted vivía de una manera muy pobre, muy modesta. En ese tiempo entiendo que su fe se fortaleció, que usted conoció la maternidad y que un buen día dejó de ser anónima porque una reportera o un reportero gráfico le tomó una fotografía y después apareció un artículo suyo en el periódico. ¿Qué pasó ahí?
At the beginning, I was so upset that happening. But then when I became a mother and I have a first baby boy, Thomas, and I hold him. And then I look at my picture, and then it moved me to the point that I really want to protect my child, my baby. I don't want my baby suffer like that little girl. And not only my baby, but the children over the world. And so I say, yes, they need to have protection. They need to have a good education and be loved. And so that's why the moment when I see that and I consider my picture is a so powerful gift for me to go back to embrace my picture and work for peace to help children. That is my dream. And I continue to dedicate my life to help, especially for children. That I make a decision. That's why I have the Kim Foundation International. And through that foundation, I can help my mission to help them by building school, building hospital, orphanage home, and library for children that we do.
Una maravilla. En el año 1996 usted tuvo la posibilidad de conocer a uno de los pilotos que estaba en ese escuadrón que lanzó las bombas. ¿Cómo fue ese encuentro? ¿Y es cierto que el piloto le pidió perdón dos veces?
In 1996, I met John Plummer. He was the pilot, but not the pilot who dropped the bomb. I have to be clear for that. He was the coordinated the airstrike, and that is I got burned in that time, and so the moment I met him. And I'm so thankful that he asked me, do you forgive me? He asked twice, "Do you forgive me?" And I'm so thankful I was able to say to him, "Yes, I do. That's why I'm here." And he asked me, "Please look at my eyes. You can see the sorrow that I carry on for 24 years. And I'm so thankful that since I became Christian, I believe in Jesus Christ. So I learned how to love my enemies, how to pray for the people who caused my suffering. And I learned to, to forgive them and then to pray for them. And the moment when my heart has been tested is a real, yes, I was able to forgive him. It is just so meaningful for me. And that moment, it's just so unforgettable for me."
Usted también quiere conocer al piloto que lanzó la bomba cuyas consecuencias están en su piel. ¿Por qué usted quiere ese encuentro?
Sí, yes. I would like to see him in person. I can tell him, yes, if he's still alive, I can tell him from deep down in my heart that little girl, forgive. She learned to forgive, and I will give him a big hug. Please forget from the, something happened in the past. We can do something to help each other in the present, in the future, that we need that. Like, I need peace and joy, and you too, you need that too. So we can work together for peace. That I will tell him. No social media, nothing. In person, I would like to see the pilot who dropped the bomb.